Welcome to the Empowered Embodiment Podcast. I am your host, Robin LaCombra. In this podcast, we explore all the feels in their full spectrum. Movements, both physical and social. Creativity, advocacy, belief systems, ambition, community care. Creating cultures of compassion where more folks feel like they truly belong. So thank you for tuning in. Thank you for being down to do the work. Let's do this. Hello, and welcome to this episode of Empowered Embodiment. I'm super excited to be joined with friend Narinder Nan. And I've known Narinder since I first moved to Hamilton. Actually, before I get into that, I will let you, Narinder, introduce yourself. Hi, and welcome. Thanks for joining.
Hi, Robin. Thank you. Thanks so much for having me on your podcast. I'm so excited you are doing this and bringing so many voices out into the world to be, you know, resonating and helping us all in this time of opening to deep listening and caring for ourselves and caring for each other. This podcast is like a cool sip of water on this hot, hot, hot day. So thank you so much for your leadership and for bringing this forward. Yeah, so I'm Narinder. Who am I? I am currently the city councilor for Ward 3 here in Hamilton. It's been an honor and a privilege and a constant reminder that I chose this and that people chose me to be in this role. And that's been pretty sacred for me to be walking this journey. I'm also a mom to a pretty incredible, amazing 4.5-year-old girl who I love. I am a partner to a kick-ass filmmaker and been living in Hamilton now for 8 years. I'm the child of immigrants from Punjab, India, you know, like many other immigrant families, the ethos of hard work and working hard, you know, rose above everything else, and also a deep ethos around not being a bystander when something happens, so that my personal liberation is tied to everybody else's, and that was in the fabric of my household and my childhood growing up. So yeah, that's kind of who I am. I grew up in a working class neighborhood in the interior of BC and made my way quickly out of there when I was young and fed up with being in a small town in the interior of BC, dealing with stuff that, you know, as a brown kid growing up in a community that was predominantly not like me, just needed to get away. And yeah, went to university, did that whole thing, dropped out, did that whole thing, and really fell in love with community organizing and fighting for what needs to be fought for from a really young age. And so at 21, I gave up university and became the first national representative on youth issues for the Canadian Labour Congress, which was a privilege and honor because it catapulted me to a national level. And an international level of doing deep leadership development with young workers from across Canada and around the world. And then that then catapulted me by the age of 28 to become the director of education and development for the largest healthcare workers union in the United States, in New York City, where I lived for a few years. And from there, I went on to manage community development for the city of Toronto, where I lived for 4 years as well. 5 years? Gosh, I don't remember anymore. But yeah, so that's me in terms of like the trajectory of who I am, where I came from, what I've been up to in the world. After that job at the City of Toronto, I kind of like hardcore burnt out and discovered some stuff in my body that was preventing me from having a kid when David and I were choosing to do that, and was diagnosed with polycystic ovarian syndrome. And some other complicated stuff too. And it kind of forced me to realize, yo, I've been like at this and going in a way that didn't honor the depth of who I am in my body. And as much
that
as I
immigrant
was,
work ethic that you
right? like,
internalized.
Literally internalized. And so, yeah, moving to Hamilton was actually part of my healing journey.
Wow.
Moving here afforded me the opportunity to study holistic nutrition, start like exploring yoga and meditation. And it was here in Hamilton that I was able to heal, reconnect, and in many ways connect for the first time with my body, and to the point that, you know, we were able to have Aria and welcome her into the world, and me be able to come back into my community organizing work and into, you know, all the stuff that I do in terms of leadership development of other peeps. And then, yeah. And then at some point, somebody's like, you should run for city council. I was like, huh, interesting. Let's try that. So that's me.
Cool. Thank you. Thank you for painting that picture. It's cool that you started off in community organizing and then experienced the burnout and listened to the screams of your body and then found your embodied practices, which then made the soil more nutrient rich for you to re-engage in your community organizing. So that's a really cool trajectory, really cool journey. When I met you, I knew you as a yoga instructor, and I remember meeting you at the I think it was Cobra's launch, the Coalition of Black and Racialized Artists. And I remember just being like, oh, Narinder's cool. I want to get to know Narinder more. And I'm ping-ponging a little bit. I'm now just remembering something that you said earlier on where you said that your liberation is tied to the liberation of others. And I think I was feeling that from you when we met at that Cobra launch. And I would love for you to speak on that for a bit. Like, for the folks who don't know me, I'm a movement instructor. I own a movement studio. And we often talk about self-care for community care. So hearing that echoed in your way, in your words, of my liberation is tied to collective liberation. Let's gem out on that for a bit. How and why? Convince the listeners.
Yeah, so I mean, for anybody who's been engaged in any kind of healing practice, whether it's body embodiment through yoga, meditation, breath, whatever journey, whatever tools, whatever medicines folks are practicing with these days, that journey towards your own healing is very much tied to getting to the core of who you are as a spirit, as a soul, as a being, and letting it manifest in its truest form and accepting it in its truest form, how it is in you, and allowing yourself to be fully that and all of that. And I don't even want to say just that, because I think we're constantly as individuals unearthing ourselves and being surprised by our own capacity in many ways when we take pause to stop and to listen and to observe. And when we align to that depth within ourselves, it's pretty easy to start to see that when other people are also enabled to be that, their full, like that their full humanity is deeply respected and honored, that then we can actually truly meet each other. And when we're in that space together, what's possible becomes infinite. So yes, it's infinite for me to do what I can do as an individual who has been on a journey of liberation and who accepts herself authentically and still struggles with that every now and again. But when I'm in that with you, or when I'm in that with my neighbors, or when we're in that together as a community, then the magic pops off, right? Then the truth and the capacity of who we are as a humanity is possible. And so my liberation, my freedom, is only going to go as far as my ability to empower other people to be in their freedom. So it is not possible for me to be fully free unless you're free and our neighbors are free and our entire city is free and all the people around us are being deeply honored for who they are, exactly as they are.
Mm-hmm. I love that. And it uplifts the interconnectedness between us, right? Like if we can compassionately meet other people where they're at, then they can compassionately hold space for who they are and potentially better hold space for who you are, which then allows you to step into your authenticity a little bit more. And then so the cycle goes back and forth when we can meet each other compassionately, recognize that we're humans, recognize that we're all on our own path of liberation and all of us are at different degrees of lucidity around that. Like not everybody recognizes that they need to liberate themselves. Speaking of people that need to liberate themselves, you're Ward 3 city councilor. And you are the only person of color at the table. And often when we talk about liberation, we talk about folks who are marginalized. And yes, of course, that's important. And I'm sure that's what you're fighting for and the voices that you're representing at the table. But just pinging off of what we were just talking about, what you had mentioned of collective liberation, how are you feeling about the need to liberate your colleagues around ideals that they might be holding on to that don't serve the collective, the greater collective? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that one has been harder. I have to admit that one of the first misconceptions that I had to face coming into this role as a counselor is, you know, I come from a world of community organizing, you know, doing things in a way that really is about building each other's leadership and honoring the strengths that people bring to the table and getting mucky when you need to get mucky around hard decisions. And my misconception coming into city council was that collaboration would be part of the ethos of what we do, and that through collaboration we'll be able to lift the city up to where it deserves to be and where our residents deserve it to be. And quickly, one of the things that I learned was that there is so much transactional work that happens when you enter politics at this level, at every level. And so I've had to deeply reconcile that, right? So my ethos turns towards transformation and I'm in a realm that is transactional. Ooh. And that in many ways often feels at odds with itself. And I find myself constantly getting sucked into the transactional world where it's about, you know, supporting one counselor to do one initiative in their area in order for them to then support me to do what I want to do in my area versus getting into the mucky conversations about the difference of perspective and the differences of experiences that our various and diverse residents go through in the city. And that's been challenging, right? Like I think every single one of us tends to pivot to our own set of experiences and values and opinions, or goes to then the closest circle around us, which often reflects a similar and shared lived experience. And so it's been a struggle at times, especially with dealing with things around hate, talking about equity, working on issues around budgeting and priorities, where the transactional tendency of elected politics has tried to create a false narrative of who I am and what I'm about. So some of my colleagues fall into that trap where they're like, oh, you're just coming about this because you are the, you know, you're playing the role of the progressive ideologue on council. And so that's really hard because in many ways, you know, I've gone through a journey in my own political life where I used to be a member of a political party. I used to be really active in political party politics. You know, I've dealt with provincial level government. I've dealt with municipal level government. I've worked on federal level government issues before. But sitting in that seat and having somebody tell you that the argument that you're making or the perspective you're bringing is in a box of ideology versus accepting that I am representing a diverse set of experiences in the neighborhood that I represent. And that beyond that, I am representing the voice of so many other marginalized communities in our city. That's been difficult. And part of it has also been difficult because as the only woman of color and the first woman of color on city council, we've only had two racialized people on city council here in Hamilton. Previous to me, it was our neighbor and friend, Matthew Green, and now myself. And, you know, being a racialized person in a position of power is also really, really tricky because it's not about the change isn't about just putting me at the seat, right? It's not just about occupying that seat as a racialized woman. It's about demystifying the notion that everything I speak of is only to represent people who look like me or share my lived experience or have some similarity of experience. So the pigeonholing that can happen sometimes of, oh, Councillor Nand is speaking and she's going to now talk about what folks of color, racialized folks need versus accepting that my perspective is one that is way broader and way deeper than that, right? And that my role at that table isn't just to represent a segment of our population because of who I am and how I look, but instead is aiming to transform and push our systems towards excellence in how we represent our people.
Wow, I feel like both of those perspectives need to be weighted. Like the oh, Narinder Nand just here to talk and represent the voices of POCs. It should be like, yeah, yeah. And so listen.
Right.
So like the weight of that, of the diverse experiences that you get to amplify at the table, that should be weighted. And also you shouldn't be pigeonholed and they need to also be able to see you as a complete human that has broader perspectives beyond the agenda of collective liberation, especially for marginalized, racialized folks. So that's just so interesting that that's what's happening. It's like, okay, cool. So this is the thing that I want to myth bust for people that are listening is just because diversity is present at the table does not mean that diversity is actually being held. Like just because you have diverse voices at the table, are the diverse voices even being heard? Are they being taken into consideration? And it sounds like from the picture that you're painting that your voice is being painted as something that people can just shrug off and eye roll at, like, oh, here we go again.
Yeah, and to be honest, it's not everybody around the table that's doing that, right? Mm-hmm, and there are a few other counselors around the table who recognize their white privilege and have come to me quite pointedly and said, what can I do as a white person around this table to take the burden off of your seat to represent the issues of equity? And, you know, that has been also super inspiring and wonderful at the same time. So I don't want to paint a false narrative either, right? Like it's not the full majority of my the table experience that I have around council that my voice is being marginalized as a marginalized individual representing marginalized peeps.
Oh, fancy that. Macro, micro, being mirrored.
But there is also the folks who are like, yeah, I want to flex my white privilege in the right way. I want to flex in figuring out, you know, how I can be a part of demonstrating to white folks in the city what it means to be an active anti-racist or to be actively working towards achieving equity and not just diversity. And that's been inspiring and wonderful. And I think that that's why I feel so lifted by the work, is that, you know, it's possible. And it's not just me around the table who understands the depth and the need to address the systemic structural issues that have been reinforcing the disparity of experiences in our population.
So with the folks, the other folks in the room that want to flex their privilege in a way to uplift movements towards equity, how has that been resonating? Like, are the other folks who might be more resistant, is it working? Is the solidarity with your white colleagues that support you, like, is that working to help open up the minds and perspectives of other folks on council?
I think it is. And so, in so much that, you know, other folks who can hear what I've said and then have it repeated by a white colleague who can hear it then come from my white colleague. Mm-hmm. I think it does have an impact. Mm-hmm. But it also, for the few who want to create this false narrative that I'm an ideologue, it is feeding into this narrative that we're, you know, a group of ideologues. Mm-hmm. So it's been interesting. I think there's a real generational issue going on here too, right? Like, I think part of the quote unquote threat that some people experience by highly capable, competent representatives around the table is that, like, I do my homework, right? We'll read whatever the heck I need to in order to prepare for agendas, argue what needs to be argued, represent the issue that needs to be represented, and most importantly, use the table to educate our residents and the city of Hamilton around a particular issue and raise critical questions. That's part of how we all ought to be operating all the time, right? Mm-hmm. And whereas folks who've been there for a while, I think they might have fallen out of that practice, or perhaps maybe didn't have that practice to start. And I think I think some people are threatened by the fact that some of us choose to read. And back our stuff up with evidence and facts and stuff, right? Like, we're not just speaking from lived experience, we're speaking from a wealth of knowledge, mm-hmm. And facts to back up what we're talking about. And mm-hmm. that seems to be kind of new around the table on some mm-hmm. issues. And it's forcing some of the other decision makers around the table, but also decision makers on other tables to push themselves a little further as well. I do believe that, and I am seeing it, you know, in terms of equity, diversity, and inclusion, even, right? Those three words.
Yeah.
Which was the very first fight around the city council table when I joined it, mm-hmm. has forced the rest of my colleagues to look at those three terms and define them in order to figure out how to engage in the conversation now that it's part of this term of council's priorities.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. Amazing. Because we're in this time where maybe we have more space to, well, or maybe we don't have space, but I feel like we're in this ripe portal of potential where we get to envision better futures. Like, if you could have the ear of everyone around the table at City Council and their ears were open and curious and compassionate, what would you say? Like, what would be the new, what would be the agreements that you would want the council to honor as sacred in terms of operating? To kind of circle back to what you said earlier around things being less collaborative and more transactional. So if you had the open ear and compassionate, curious ear of folks around the table, what would be your roadmap towards collaboration?
I think the invitation that I've been working on, inviting my colleagues and anybody in decision-making power in this city to engage in is a deep conversation about honoring the humanity of every individual in this city, mm-hmm. while also equally holding sacred our planet, our earth, our land, our air. And for many, that is just like a, huh? You know, like there's been such a depth of disconnection. There's been just such a system of disconnection. There has been an entire capitalist system that survives and thrives and profits on isolation, that everybody has to work out of in order to deepen their engagement into seeing each other, you know? Mm-hmm. So for me, one of the things is like when somebody comes to delegate at city council, for example, or somebody writes a written submission, there are people that, you know, you would see more often, and, you know, empowered voices of marginalized communities who have a say very often and use their right, their democratic right, to give opinion, give thought, give insight onto an issue. And what's unfortunate is over time, I think people stop listening. Mm. In positions of power, because it's like, oh, it's, you know, it's that squeaky wheel again. When the reality is that squeaky wheel is like the third generation of squeaky wheels on those issues. So issues of oppression, mm. issues of, you know, concern around the values and integrity of the way in which we're operating or processing as a government, operationalizing our democracy. And so I think my invitation is, what's preventing you from listening to somebody that you've seen 10 times before? Mm-hmm. And sit with that, right? Sit with the reality that if a racialized person, and specifically a Black person, has been delegating to city council, that there's moments in which you choose to stop listening. Identify that second that you decided to stop listening to that individual. What is operating there? What's going on for you? Why did you just check out right there and then? You know, being a political representative is such an honorable role. And I think, unfortunately, the honor over time has been eroded from these positions. A lot of people roll their eyes when I tell them that I've chosen politics. And it's because there's an erosion of trust, an erosion mm-hmm. of respect that people have experienced by their political representatives, and then vice versa, right? And I want to bring the honor and the sacred back to this role. Humanity has structured itself into decision-making circles from, like, time ago, right? So whether from the dawn, whether we're, you know, collectively sitting around the local village tree, or, you know, figuring out how to survive in the wilderness, we've found ways to deeply listen to each other and choose a course forward together. But in this kind of fast forwarded pace of where we are right now, I think we've lost that flex, that actual human flex of deeply listening to each other, pausing with the thought, pausing with our own experience of what we've just heard, and then choosing to speak. So I don't know if I've answered the question, but I think fundamentally is it is that, you know, and that is my invitation to folks. And I think that a lot of folks are scared by that. Like, more than anything, I think what I experience in every single leadership role that I've held and every single decision-making table I've sat on is a deep fear of getting it wrong mm-hmm. when it comes to issues around equity and inclusion. There is an understanding that the system isn't working for everybody. That's clear. Everybody knows that, right? You have to look at what people have and understand that there is a have and a have not, mm-hmm. That certain people we see more often in positions of power, many people that we don't. That is a truth that many people, majority of the world, understands. But it's the that now what part that scares the crap out of folks, because they're just so scared of getting it wrong. And I think the second invitation is, don't worry about messing up, right? We are going to make mistakes along the way. I am constantly making mistakes, and that's why I'm getting better at what I do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it is the actual taking the steps of doing different, that doing other, not doing things the way that you're used to doing things, pushing yourself out of your comfort zone, as reluctant as your ego is, and just like taking a deep breath and taking that step in to the hard conversation and agreeing to try things differently.
Like it's like we've lost the muscle of curiosity. Because like, you know, if instead of being like, oh, there's the squeaky wheel again, like get curious, like, oh, this squeaky wheel keeps coming back. Like, I wonder what would be possible if instead of rolling my eyes and trying to ignore the squeaky wheel, I looked at the squeaky wheel, I reached for some WD-40 and sprayed it on this, like, what would be possible? It's like that question is no longer there because the heels are dug in the sand of like, doesn't matter what's possible. What's present is that I've got what I've got and I don't want to compromise that. Or whatever the narrative is. So I love the invitation of like, take a beat and listen, take a beat and look at it, take a beat and feel it and hear it out. And I think that that's so applicable right now to everybody. Like literally everybody should learn how to take a beat. Literally everybody should learn how to listen with curiosity and like sit with it for a second. And then your second invitation of not worrying about getting it wrong, like that too. Everyone should just feel okay about making mistakes and understanding that it's an inevitable part of life, is that we're going to make mistakes, we're going to cause harm. And then where we get to show our integrity is how we rise to the occasion of taking accountability and saying sorry and course correcting. So listen, look at the thing, listen, and don't be afraid of making mistakes. I love that, like these are agreements that I feel every human should adopt in relationship to others and in relationship to their own self. When you said earlier, I wish folks could just take a breath. What would be possible if we all learned how to resource our breath?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, and I think that resourcing of breath is the enabler of integrity. And it is easy for us to start, well, no, it's not easy. It's hard for many of us also to say what needs to be said. And, you know, like I'm often coaching folks to say, like, even when your voice is quivering, in fact, especially when your voice is quivering, it is so necessary to hear what your heart needs to say. That's the time that your story has the most capacity, the most power to have impact to every person who is listening. And when we empower the breath in those quivering moments of truth and love that's on its way out from our voice box, that when we enable the breath and empower the breath to move us through that moment, then all of a sudden integrity becomes so much more possible too. Because if integrity is the follow through of our words, right? If integrity is bringing to action the words that are spoken, then we start to flex into this power that is fully charged by complete life force energy. And it is the energy that we all need to survive. And it's that much more powerful. So, you know, for all of us who kind of get comfortable behind our computer screens, on our keyboards, and typing out what needs to be said, or those of us who work through the quivering breath and say what needs to be said, then the next step of the journey of getting those words out is the doing. and the enacting of those words. And like you said, coming back into that beautiful spiral, right? Of like, okay, so I said these things, then I did some stuff. And then what, you know, like, it's not over then. Like, that's actually just the beginning.
The beginning. You know?
Then comes the fun part of like, okay, now let me sit with that and like reflect on it. What do I need to do differently next time? What's possible for me next time? And to recognize that, everything that we start doing has such a long possible trajectory to it, and to really let that sink in, right? Like every single time we choose to be in that spiral of speaking our words and living into them and pausing and reflecting and then choosing to keep going, the trajectory of our impact is exponential and continues to grow when we are in that flex.
Yes.
And that's when my liberation is tied to yours and everybody else's, because I need you to ask me some of those hard questions sometimes. I need other people to be like, yo, Narinder, that was cool. And
yes.
You know? Yeah. Yes. And so like the calling in and the loving and the nurturing, that part, that depth of deep respect and honoring, like that's where the magic is, and that's where the community is, and that's where the relationships are. And that's when we start actually empowering each other in order to empower ourselves.
Oh, I love this. Yeah, like everything is a conversation. Everything is a conversation, and we can be compassionately emboldening each other to use our voice and compassionately calling us forth to reflect and pivot. So I feel like this is a skill that isn't practiced around, you know, bravely stepping forward and sharing your voice, or bravely calling someone forth to have them reflect. And I feel like more and more folks are waking up to the need for them to use their voice, right? Like we're in the pandemic, and social justice movements, especially around Black Lives Matter and defunding the police, are getting louder and louder. And then there are folks who are maybe not directly experiencing the marginalization or the oppression, like maybe non-BIPOC folks who are like your colleagues, who want to help and support you, but are maybe nervous about using their voice. So I would like this to be directed to them, and this to be directed to all folks who are afraid to use their voice to have difficult conversations. I'm wondering how you prepare yourself to enter into those council meetings where you know you're going, like, you know you're going to come up against resistance, like, you know you're walking into the fire. So what are tools that you have? What are practices, rituals, whatever, that you engage in so that you can show up knowing full well you're entering the fire and you can tolerate the fire for as long as you can? What are your practices around that?
The caveat I'm going to give is I am like super Capricorn. Capricorn's up in every house of mine. And so I say that because...
So be a Capricorn. Got it. Be born in January.
No. Gosh, I wish I had so much more of other things in my house, because I feel like what I'm about to say might sound hard, right? And it is. And the invitation is to be like, how do you soften the hardest and most challenging moments of your life, right? And so that's been the big lesson for me over and over again, is like, Narinder, come on down to the tender spots, right? Like, come on down into the mushy, because the mushy is where your freedom is. It's the mushy is where your soul gets to dance. And so prior to getting into the challenging fire of some of the moments that I have to prepare for around that table and other places, is a practice of inviting fear, anxiety, and the critic to my counsel. And so what that means is I literally take some time, like about a 15 to 25 minute time slot, and I give fear, anxiety, and critic a voice. And I literally write it out. So I make a little circle, little circle in the middle of the paper, write down the issue. And then I say, what's fear telling me about this moment? What's anxiety? What's the counsel of anxiety in this moment? What's the counsel of the critic in this moment? Mm. And what that does is it enables me to face all three of them that are within me and that sometimes get vocalized by other people.
Mm.
And I feel so much more prepared and capable and grounded when I'm met by fear, anxiety, and critic in real life and
yes.
out in the world.
Cool.
Right? So it's like taking those things that we often, yeah, you know, the shadow and bring and giving it voice. Because like, honestly, like if I didn't listen to myself when I'm afraid, I would be in harm's way often. You know, if I didn't listen to anxiety, you know, I would be dishonoring myself. And if I didn't take the time to like talk about the critic's perspective, then I'd be caught off guard. And ain't nobody gonna catch me off guard. Ain't nobody gonna get that from me. Heck no, right? Like I'm here to stand. I'm here to stand.
This is so great. It's like the opposite of spiritual bypassing, right? Like it would have, I feel like often when someone's like, how do you prepare yourself? Like I meditate on love and light and like obviously time and space for that and love and light. Yes, of course. But, and course. Also when you meet your fears head on, when you meet your anxieties head on, when you meet your critic head on, it prepares you for when you meet the thing that you're afraid of outside of yourself, the thing that you're anxious of outside of yourself and the critic that exists outside of yourself. And so I think that is such an amazing practice. I had a conversation with a colleague the other day where they're like, oh, I always go into worst case scenario mode. I'm like, that's not a bad thing. Like go there, go to worst case scenario, plot out worst case scenario. What is worst case scenario? And then level set your expectations of like, oh, actually worst case scenario isn't so bad or whatever it is. Like, I don't think spending time and I think we spend so much time avoiding worst case scenario. Yeah. Like what if we gave worst case scenario a chance to express itself? So I love that that's your one of the practices. And I think that's a really unique takeaway of this conversation that the listeners can come away with. Like when they sit at the table and they know that their racist uncle is going to be there, like what is the worst case scenario if you bring up 100%. That your uncle's racist? Worst case scenario is, I don't know, maybe they leave dinner and that's okay.
Mm-hmm. Or maybe you leave dinner because you have to deeply honor yourself and that's totally okay.
Yes.
Right? It's been the most freeing thing for me because it's like, it's shifting the power of being, powered over versus like, all right, this is my homie fear. This is my homie critic. This is my homie worst case scenario. This is my homie critic over here. They all got stuff to contribute.
Yeah.
And, yeah, you know, every single person, every single individual is capable of so much. And when we embrace those notions and we take the time to plot out the worst case scenario, I love that too. I think I'm going to add that in to my little circles. It enables us to act. And so we get out of the stagnancy. We get out of the stuckness. We get out of the muck that holds us back from doing what's possible.
Beautiful. Yeah. Cause it's like, we're now collecting more data, right? Like when you consult your fear, your anxiety, your worst case scenario, your critic, you're collecting more data. And when we've collected more data, we can make more informed and prepared. We can make more informed decisions and take more prepared action. And so I think that's a really powerful, empowering thing for people to take away. It's like, yeah, don't ignore the squeaky wheel. Don't ignore the fear inside and out of you. Look at it compassionately with curiosity. Collect the data and then breathe and then listen and then act. Mm-hmm. Beautiful. This has been such a great conversation. And thank you for sharing that practice, that in practice of like your empowered embodiment before facing the heat, is to like level set your responsivity or reactivity around those things so that you can in the moment be more responsive, because you've already gone through the reaction when you were seeking counsel with your inner fear, inner critic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'd say like the other reality of this role is that at times there's a lot of overwhelm too, right? So there's the work of the governance around the table and the policy work and the decision making around motions and all that kind of stuff. The other major part of the role is representing people who are having some sort of navigation need with the system. So, you know, your garbage can get picked up or you're living in an apartment building where the landlord is fully negligent of their responsibilities and duties, and you're looking for somebody to help you figure out how to make sure your home is a safe place where you can, you know, rest your beautiful head. And sometimes, you know, when you represent an area that is inner city and that has its historical compounding layers to it, the ways in which we can help our folks in the city, the requests for help are quite huge. The volume of calls and emails and requests that myself and my team have to deal with on a weekly basis is quite a bit. And so there's moments where it feels really overwhelming. And I think that that's the other major kind of thing that I've had to figure out, how to like work through overwhelm. And the biggest thing for me to like come back to home, come back to my body, come back to my humanity is spending time in nature. And so if that's like, you know, walking over to Gage Park and enjoying watching the leaves turn or watching the leaves sway or watching the squirrels play, whether it's, you know, when I have a little bit more time riding my bike down to the water, nature has been the biggest container and holder for me in times of overwhelm, just to let the breath out and give myself and my team encouragement to do the same, you know, and so that we can meet people where they're at without taking on all the energy of what folks are going through at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like finding your transformative practice where you can take that uncensored, unfiltered breath to strengthen your capacity to keep on listening to the hard stuff. Thank you for sharing that. Yeah, nature is a really pivotal part of my support circle too. Mm-hmm. So if you could encourage or motivate, if you could say something that would encourage and motivate the people listening, maybe it grounds the idea that our personal liberation is tied to collective liberation, like for the people who are feeling lost or overwhelmed and not knowing where that bridge is, where is the bridge to individual and collective liberation? Like what is one thing or a couple things that you can offer to people who want to wake up and do the work and stay in the work?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it is like wake up and choose to do the work. my dad used to have this saying in Punjabi, like "Pani pivo to mint dinal kam karo," which is, you know, take a sip of water, roll up your sleeves, and get to work. And when you need to, do that again. Take a sip of water, take your breath, do the next thing you need in order to enable the work. Mm-hmm. And just like allow yourself the grace to stop and recollect and go again. And just like everyday life and all the things that we got to do in order to keep the things moving in our life, just be there, be with that. Take that sip of cold water, whether it's literally hydrating your body or if it's the cool wind of a dear friend who can be with you in a moment that the work has gotten too hard in, to laugh with, to play with, to dance with, to deeply honor your humanity and be human in this messiness of trying to untangle ourselves and the way in which we exist from the systems that operate that we don't even all understand completely. And be in that dream world enough to tap into what's possible and tell other people what your dreams are full of. Keep speaking about the possibility that you envision, because at some point somebody's gonna be like, yeah, me too, you know, or yeah, heck yeah, I want to get on that train, you know, or yeah, let's do that thing. And to recognize that we're capable of so much and not with a lot at the same time, right? And to flex into our collective strength, our collective resourcing. And to always, 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 always seek agreement, seek consent, all the things that you would teach your children, all the things that you would want from your lover, you know, it's like all those things are a part of also participating in our communities and participating in our society. So let your flow be seen, let your magic be seen, let your dreams have voice, and yeah, do it. Take a sip, you know, just do it.
Just do it. I love it. Let your dreams have voice. Thank you so much for all of your wonderful insight and for sharing so candidly and giving us insight into the inner workings of advocating for self and advocating for voices often gone unheard. And I think people listening will, their eyes will open a little bit more, because sometimes it's like, well, why don't people just pull up their bootstraps and, you know, get the life that they want? It's like, yes, also, and we've been doing that.
Yeah. And yes, also, and some people don't got boots. Like,
yeah,
let's just be clear.
Get them boots.
Let's get them boots. Yes. Let's everybody take off the boots.
Yeah, actually just fuck boots. Boots. Boots is capitalism, everybody.
Seriously.
Amazing. Will you lead us through a closing, cleansing, integrating meditation or pulse check? I just like to offer our listeners a way to, well, do exactly what we were just talking about, of like allowing the grace to stop and taking pause and sourcing breath. We talked about a lot of beautiful and heavy things that it would be nice to culminate our conversation in a way that grounds and brings us back home to our body. Would you be open?
Yeah. So, if you aren't already, take a seat and sit somewhere comfy and relaxed. So whether you're sitting cross-legged or sitting in a chair, just give yourself a little bit more space between your knees. Relax your back while also at the same time allowing your head to reach up towards the heavens and grounding your sit bones and also elevating your spine. And you can choose where you want to place your hands. You can place your hands down on your thighs if you feel like you need more grounding energy, or you can face your palms up if you feel like you need more uplifting energy. And the invitation here is going to be literally working with your breath and moving your shoulders. And we're going to do some shoulder rolls synchronized with our breath. And so on the inhale, you'll bring your shoulders up towards your ears and then back, squeezing those shoulder blades, and then down as you exhale. Inhale, bringing your shoulders up towards your ears. Back and down and out. Let's do that one more time. Inhaling, bringing your shoulders up towards your ears. Back and down. and out. Yeah. So one final quote that I've been sitting with a lot lately is, you know, from Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., and that is, power at its best is love implementing the demands of justice. And justice at its best is power correcting everything that stands against love.
That's so beautiful. Can you read that one more time so we can let it sink in?
Power at its best is love implementing the demands of justice. And justice at its best is power correcting everything that stands against love.
My goodness. Thank you so much, Narinder. You are such a powerful, brilliant, bright human. And I'm so honored and privileged to know you. And I'm so grateful that you occupy the seats you occupy. And thank you so much for taking time out of your incredibly busy schedule to have this conversation with me and let us all in a little bit.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Catch Narinder at, how can people get in contact with you? I should have.
Yeah, totally. You can find me on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, not so much, but definitely on Instagram at Narinder Ward 3.
Narinder Ward 3. Narinder is backing lots of beautiful community projects too. So if you're in the Hamilton area, get loud and let's support and rally behind the community initiatives that Narinder has been putting forth. Thank you again so much, Narinder, and thank you to everyone listening. We will catch you next time on Empowered Embodiment.
Bye.
Bye.